Welcome to Merit or Myths SD Cropcast, engaging the South Dakota farming community in the pursuit of healthy, functioning soils. Welcome to episode 3 of the SD Cropcast. I am Barrett Self.
And I'm Buzz Klute.
And we actually have one of my favorite interviews of this past year that we're featuring today with Brian and Jamie Johnson out of Frankford, South Dakota.
Yeah, these guys are really impressed me the way they farm as a team. I think that was the thing that sort of struck me the most about those guys.
Very much so. Very, very team-oriented, the Johnsons.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you're a team, part of that ethic that you have is a little bit of humility. I like the fact that South Dakota awards this Aldo Leopold Award. Places a high value on it. And Aldo Leopold actually said that part of the land ethic is the shift from being a conqueror of the land to be a citizen and a participant in the land. And I think Brian and Jamie really embrace that role of being participants and, in a sense, citizens of that land.
Yeah, and that's a pretty substantial mindset shift from how we've conventionally been farming and really viewing the land in general to what we're moving towards and the farmers that we're kind of interviewing these days and the research that we're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're taking stuff that has been known for a long time but may have been forgotten in the recent generations and really applying that. You know, as we go through this, the things that struck me was, of course, their land ethic. And then they talk about their system. So not just individual commodities, but their system and how each crop and their livestock, how all of those things interact. And you can't just look at one crop at one time, but they start looking at this in a long-term, taking a long-term view of it. I like their approach towards weeds. And Brian talks about this whole notion of resilience. And what struck me about this was 2017, I think for the most part in South Dakota, was a tough year. When we went in, they had just finished harvesting their soybeans. Their corn was looking really good. So they were actually quite pleased with their crop year, whereas a lot of farmers were really struggling about that. And so that, to me, points to some of the resilience of their land.
Yeah, definitely. It was very eye-opening to visit with them and hear their more systems approach, which is what we're trying to cover in this second season of our videos this year. All right, well, let's get out of the way and let you guys enjoy episode 3 of the SD Cropcast. This one is with Brian and Jamie Johnson.
I'm with Brian and Jamie Johnson from Frankfort, South Dakota, and we're just here to talk about your lands and what you have here. We've spent a little bit of time in the field looking at some of the things that they've been doing, and it's been pretty impressive. But I wanted to start out with a general question and ask you, what is your relationship to this land? What do you feel when you're out here, and how do you feel connected to the land?
Well, I'd say, I mean, this is our life. I mean, we have to take care of it so that it can take care of us. And that's been, I think, the goal for this family for generations here when my great-grandfather settled here. And part of why when my dad went to no-till decades ago was because he knew that we had to take care of the soil and it would take care of us, because he was seeing through the practices back in the early 80s that it was not producing what it should produce, and it was not allowing the water to stay in the soil because of all your tillage, and so he knew there had to be a better way. And so it's something we're still continuing today, is to treat the land so that it can take care of us. Anything you'd like to add?
It's part of us. It's part of our family. It's like Brian said, you have to take care of it for it to take care of us, but it's part of who we are. And it is. It's important to be, I don't know, the buzzword sustainable, but it's also dollars and cents. If you take care of it, it'll take care of you. Mm-hmm. And we have four kids and we want to pass this down to one or more of them. And in order to do that, to keep this farm going into more generations, we have to keep it the best condition that we can. So it's a part of the family. We've got to, just like you take care of the health of the individual members of your family, we have to take care of the health of this land, whether it's crop ground or pasture or hayland or whatever piece of ground it is. We look at each piece and we want to make sure that it's doing the best it can do, so it's here for the long run.
I'd like you to tell us a little bit about the system that you have going here. I'm not sure how the acres are not important, but I'd like to tell us you to tell us what your system looks like and how you're integrating everything in to that system.
Well, in several decades ago, there used to be a lot of small grain in this part of the state and in this county. And then as time went along, wheat wasn't as profitable, and this became more of a corn and soybean area. I think kind of continues with the theme that the Corn Belt moved west in a way. And so we can produce some great corn and soybean around here, but then you don't have the diversity in your crop rotation that I think we're seeing the benefits of now. And so we've been trying to bring back as much wheat as possible on the fields that require that more diversity in our operation. And so instead of just corn and beans, we've got some spring wheat, corn and bean rotation. We grow some oats and occasionally some barley. You know, it just depends on what our feed needs are for our livestock as well. And so by using the small grain, we're able to really shine with our cover crop behind that rotation. And because it can grow for 2+ months in the fall after spring wheat harvest. And okay. So it's another avenue to add some diversity in our soil for our crops. And it's now that we've also incorporated our livestock back into certain fields that are near the farm during the winter season, it's a little bit more diversity there as well.
Okay, so let me see if I get it right. Maybe the conventional way of doing things here is going to be corn and soybean rotation. And what you've now is you've got your warm season corn and soybean, and then you've got your cool season, your spring wheat, and then mm-hmm. barley's. And then you've also started with a multi-species cover crop, and then bringing back cattle into that rotation. Is that correct?
Or yeah.
Into that system?
Yeah, I'd say that's correct. Yeah. It's and obviously the economics of farming have to work, and that's where, you know, you still have to be able to pencil a profit, or you hope to pencil a profit when you're putting in your grain. And so wheat is borderline, but we found that we can produce the yields for our wheat that can make it profitable. And then by following with a cover crop, our corn and our soybeans are more profitable the next year. So you can't tie that, just that 1 year's profitability to spring wheat. I mean, you've got to take that extra gain you get from corn and beans and attribute that back to your small grain.
Yep. So yeah, Shane told me something like a 15% yield bump behind the wheat. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd say yes.
And that's for corn and soybeans, or was that for a particular crop?
That's probably both.
Both. Okay.
Both in this area. Yes.
Gotcha.
It's something else with that. Having that small grain in your rotation, you have a lot better weed suppression too. So yes, we're finding that we necessarily don't have the weed problems that maybe some neighbors have, because we're, you know, that residue from the wheat or the small grains creates a nice cover on the soil, so your weed seeds aren't even getting in there to germinate and right. come up and growing. So a lot of people that, you know, a lot of buzz in the industry now is the weeds that you're not killing with the herbicides. You know, well, we really don't have, on our farm, we really don't have a lot of problems with that. And I think that can be attributed to using, you know, the small grains in the rotation and keeping it diverse, yep. not, you know,
And because of that diversity in your crop rotation, you also have a diversity in your herbicides that you can choose
from. Right.
Correct. You know, right. Whether it's your pre's or your post's, you know, and so you've got multiple layers there to for weed suppression.
Right.
And so it all works together.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and that's very consistent with, you know, what Dr. Randy Anderson has found is that when you're putting a cool season behind a warm season, or sometimes two cool seasons, but behind two warm seasons, you're breaking those cycles.
Yep.
Right.
And that's not necessarily consistent with what the industry wants you to understand.
Right.
So yeah. I'm assuming you're making savings on inputs as well, herbicides, is that correct?
Yeah, and part of that is just because we don't have the weed pressure.
Yeah.
And so we don't have to go out there more than twice a year to knock these weeds back,
right,
and still have escapes. You know, it's pretty much by placing your pre, and then if you have to do a post, your field is clean.
Yeah. Jamie, I'm fascinated. It seems like you have had an influence on some of the strategic decisions, and maybe I should ask both of you that because you might be too modest about it, but how has your perspective on this operation influenced it strategically?
I just keep nagging until he does what I want him to do.
Well, give me some examples.
Well, I don't know. I grew up on a cattle farm in Nebraska, and it's totally different perspective from a row crop farmer. And I feel like that's what kind of operation we have here is a row crop farm. And although we do have a cattle side of it, but it's not focused solely on the cattle. And we're getting to the point where it's one system, not just, oh, we've got a few cattle on the side because we can't farm this piece of ground, so it's pasture. We're trying to integrate all of that into one system across the whole farm, whether or not you can get cattle on a piece of ground or not. But I don't know, I've always enjoyed the view of wheat, and I'd never seen wheat grown until we got married. One of the first years that we still grew wheat when we were first married, and then we took a large break of having small grains on the farm because we were so wet here we couldn't get them in the ground. I don't know, and it was just the beauty of having that diversity across the farm of having something besides corn and soybeans and then learning and seeing what those things do to the soil and how that can help the next crop just intrigued me. And I'm just like, let's just keep doing this as much as we can to keep that diversity in the rotation. Because I'm a long-term thinker, and I just want to give this farm to whoever comes next in the best possible condition for them to be successful. And that's all you ever want for your kids, if it's your kids or whoever comes next. You know, maybe they don't take it over, but I don't know. I just keep poking and I keep prying, and I read just as much as Brian does, but I might read in different areas where he's not reading. We kind of crisscross on the research and the farm articles. Did you see that one? No, I skipped that one because I knew you would read it, you know, like, I don't know. We're kind of a team, and we just sometimes it takes a little bit longer to bite the bullet and try something new. But I think we're pretty progressive and trying new things and trying to incorporate some new practices to just keep things progressing. I know that's kind of I've said that a few times.
I think fortunately for our operation was she came from outside of this area, so she didn't have a bias of doing things a certain way,
right?
And so she's challenged me on that front every day. You know, why do you do it this way? And that's where a lot of those strategic changes on our farm have been, because she's asking me questions, and she's a big picture thinker more than I am, and challenges me. Well, if why don't you try this? See what happens. And over time, I agree that, like most husbands, the wife is right, and I need to try it. and so it comes back to, okay, yep, we made this change, it works, and we're going to try something else and keep progressing. And that's the beauty of when you know, on farm life and your spouse is invested just like you are, in seeing this as a successful operation to pass on to the next generation, and they challenge you with new ideas, and you don't have to come up with it all on your own. You know, there's someone else there thinking, why don't we do this and incorporate the livestock a little more, and, you know, change up your grazing patterns a little bit and change. Some guys are fortunate to have met their spouse that can do that. And I'm one of those guys.
Well, and so, you know, back to you have to make it. You got to make the pencil hit the paper, and the farm economy is hard. It's a hard life to make ends meet, and the diversity helps keep things even, you know, as far as income and expenses. Well, you plant wheat, you've got income in August, or, you know, depending on the year, the end of July. It spreads out your workload a little bit. If you can increase your cattle production, you've got a bigger calf check come whenever you sell your calves, or maybe you can expand your cattle operation into selling bred heifers, or you sell off bred cows, or, you know, whatever it is. If you can put a little bit more emphasis on some of those areas, you make the economics of it work a little bit better, instead of just having corn, soybeans, and that's, you get your check in the fall, or you market throughout the year, of course, but you're not just solely relying on those two things. And when you have a drought, you're just kind of like, oh, whoops.
You know? Insurance money.
Right. So you're spreading out your risk, and you're spreading out your wealth also.
You end up with a higher return on those cattle by incorporating them back into some of your cropland where you have those small grains and cover crops, and, you know, that is a pretty high return for your cattle for feed there.
Yeah.
It all works out, and it's good for the ground as well. And you're going to see that benefit when you plant another row crop in there following that.
Well, we had talked about that earlier. This is sort of a bunny trail, but just tell us about your manuring. You had some manuring where your calves were overwintering, but you're seeing that change now?
Well, you know, part of the living here in South Dakota is that, you know, the winters can be cold and they're harsh, and so we've got a location next to our farm that's good winter protection for our cattle, but it also results in having to haul manure, and you know, that's just the nature of the beast.
Right.
And if you get a winter where it's not feet upon feet of snow and cold and windy every day, you can have those cattle on a different parcel where they, and feed them there,
right,
if necessary, and the manure has already been moved. And so obviously that's an expense that you didn't have to cover.
Yes.
And they've placed it randomly in the field, and it's going to be there, as you know, for your next year's fertility.
Yeah. Well, I just sort of pursuing this women in farming thing that we're seeing more and more a participation. What is your role in the farm? Where are you involved mainly in the day-to-day operations? I know you profoundly have affected some of the strategic thinking, but what are the day-to-day things that you're doing as well?
Oh, it just depends. Mostly I'm mom.
Yeah.
Mostly that's my job. 99.9% of the day.
Yeah.
But I keep all the books for the farm. Before the last baby was born, I helped quite a bit during harvest in the field. One of my favorite things to do is cattle. I grew up with cattle and hated it because we had to help, and now I love that aspect of the farm. I really enjoy working cattle and sorting cattle and being part of that side of the operation. Everything, I guess there's always a conversation every night or every morning. What are you doing today? Do you need help? Do I need to switch something in my schedule with the kids to help run you to a field? Or, you know, okay. Right now I'm not helping in the field because we had a baby last year, so it's kind of hard to have a one-year-old in the tractor or the combine with you. But just, we talk about what varieties he's going to plant or what he's ordering or help. You know, I may not physically be outside, but mentally where we have a debriefing every day of what's going on, what's happening, what, you know, parts runner. I don't know. There's a time I think that will come when Brian's parents are not as active on the farm as they are, and it'll be me and Brian outside every day with the kids doing the work.
Okay.
Doing repairs and, you know, moving cattle, and, you know, it'll come to that point, and that'll be okay. And that's kind of where we're headed, and that's our goal, is to be doing that together, because we do, some spouses aren't as lucky to be able to work well together, and we do work well together when we're outside. We do a lot of fencing together, and we try to involve the kids as much as we safely can. And luckily our oldest one is old enough to watch the baby on her own, so that helps out a lot when I need to be helping Brian. But, you know, as far as day to day, I'm mom and bookkeeper. I make sure the bills are paid, or I say, did you know that repair bill was going to be that much money?
Well, I was going to ask you how much in your role of bookkeeping, how much does that affect your view of the farm? And how much does that inform you when you're making decisions, strategic and tactical?
Well, I think the first few years it was obviously, you know, not just her, but us together when we were starting farming. You didn't realize quite the financial impact that it has on your life and the risk that's involved.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of an eye-opener from the start, because it was different than what. And the farm is completely different than what she was used to as a child in Nebraska.
Right, because your parents don't normally involve you in money discussions or loans and stuff like that. But it's more, I don't know, when we were first married, I used to worry a lot about that, I guess. You know, the loans and the amount of debt and money and income. And we're always aware, okay, you need to have something marketed for March so that we can cover cash rent payments in April. You need to, you know, that sort of thing. It definitely helps increase your awareness of the cycle of farming, of when money comes in and money comes out, and how to manage that better. I don't worry about it so much anymore. It's just life.
And I think part of the reason she doesn't worry is because we've seen a fairly consistent trend with our yields, our production. And she's not worried that are we going to be able to farm next year or the next. And then that goes back to our systems approach here on the farm in our diversity and the crops and the cattle. And she doesn't have a need to worry.
And we do a fairly intensive record keeping on our fields, so we know what our break evens are, if we're losing money, where we're losing it, or where we're making money, you know, how to increase that. Brian does a lot of in-depth record keeping on a lot of his inputs and stuff like that, so we know exactly where we're sitting on every piece of ground, so that helps us manage the farm a lot better too. So he does a lot more of that stuff. I just make sure the bills are paid, and I say, you need to go sell some corn.
That sounds good. You talked about the trends increasing. Tell us about some of the trends, not only from a production standpoint, but what you're actually seeing on the land.
Well, I think your goal is always to, you know, have it be profitable, but also going back to leaving the land, you know, in a better spot than you did when you started it, when you took it over.
Yeah.
And so you want to not mine the soil for all of its nutrients and not till it to death.
Yeah.
And so we've seen a trend on our farm where the productivity is not only increased, but just the healthiness of all of our soil has increased. Now, whether that's through CRP acres or your small grains and your cover crops and your crop rotation and the increased residue and increased organic matter, and everything is, I feel, not only more productive, but it's more productive because the other systems have increased and are in a better place now than they were 10, 20 years ago, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And so it goes back to the whole, you know, you treat the land right and it'll take care of you in return.
Yeah, yeah. Have you seen any changes? I mean, you take a shovel out from time to time. You know, have you seen changes in color or soil structure or more earthworms or something like that? Is there something that a farmer, you know, somebody without necessarily having a science background would be able to say, wow, you know, this was so different 20 years ago or something like that?
I think in our area, it's noticeable after a large rain event. You know, you'll drive by and you'll see these fields that are managed to the, you know, the best of the farmer's ability. And then maybe across the road, one is a little different, you know,
yeah.
It's tilled or just has a different plan.
Yeah.
And say you get 5 inches of rain or even two, and there'll be water. Guess which side of the road the water standing is at.
Yes.
You know, and so you can see it. That's a not something that maybe you can put a dollar and cents on right at that moment, but it's noticeable that, yes, this field has better soil structure, the water infiltration, and that in turn is going to result in higher productivity down the road.
So the water goes in the ground. It's going to be available for the next crop, maybe 3 or 4 inches.
Yep.
And the neighbors might have a saline spot.
Yeah.
Something like
right.
That.
Yeah. And we're seeing improvement also in those saline areas where, you know, we struggled for years not having anything growing on it to having weeds grow on it to having cover crops growing in those spots. So
yep.
We're seeing that. We know that that soil is improving. You know, when you at least get some weeds to grow on it, that's yeah. improvement than having nothing on
yeah.
it.
Right.
You know, yeah. And then you can come back and you can have, you know, your small grains on there and your cover crops. So we know we're improving those areas. You're like, yes, you don't have white
yeah.
junk
yeah.
all
yeah.
over my soil.
Yeah.
So that's,
yep.
to me, that's in the water thing, the not, you know, not having the standing water is great improvements. And just in the last 5 years, that's
yep.
been something really.
So that you—that's something you can see visibly, right?
Right.
Yep. Right.
Yep. And that would be just the average Joe can see that, but as a yep. farmer, when you get out in there with your shovel, you can really tell
yep.
the difference
yep.
there. And
well, I noticed on both your where you had cut your soybeans and then on your corn, in each place, I found some earthworms pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really good thing. Yeah.
Yep.
Fantastic. Tell me about, this is really, again, perhaps talking about the same thing but reframing it. South Dakota is a land of extremes. Tell me about your understanding of resiliency and how you have seen your land becoming, your system, your economic system, your land system become more resilient with this diverse the focus on diversity and options that you have?
Well, I think that gets back to 10, 15 years ago when it was very wet here and there was just water issues for everybody. And we knew that something had to change in how we were managing our land. And so we entered certain parts of fields into the CRP program because it was just not going to be able to be crop ground based on that water that we were receiving. But that in turn made us take a bigger picture look at all of our land and say, okay, what's the best use for this land? Not what's really going to be the most profitable, but what's the best use for that? And so we had entered those acres in the CRP, and the surrounding cropland benefited even though it wasn't in that program, because that grass
yeah.
was back to using water the way it's supposed to, you know, centuries ago, it was sod. And so now we get into our, you know, our rotation with our crops and being able to withstand these weather extremes. And, you know, we were in a pretty severe drought this year, and you go west of here and it was by far worse. But we weren't sure we were going to have a crop middle of summer, and now we've done with our beans, and the corn is going to look nice. I mean, we're looking at probably average above average year again. And it makes you think back then, okay, we're doing something right. And it's that whole system of, you know, the diversity and the no-till and having the cattle, you know, grazing different areas that we had not in the past. And it, you're allowed to be able to withstand those ups and downs in the economy and the weather so that you can still farm the next year and have something to pass on years down the road as well. You know, resilience, sustainable.
Yeah.
You know, it's, if you take care of each, not treat a field as just one field, but fields within a field.
Yes.
So that you're, you know, some of it is not productive and some of it is, and you match up what's best for that piece of ground. It, you will survive and live to farm another day.
Well, I wanted to come into something a little bit more specific. You've been, you showed me some of your precision cover cropping. You're basically planting your beans and your vetch and your lentils in a strip. Tell us a little bit about that. You might as rather than incorporate that again, please. But just tell us about that, the strip cover crops that you're doing.
Well, several years ago, we were doing our cover crops and we were planting them with your drill. And it just, we weren't terribly happy with the placement and how they were coming out of the ground and just the population that we were getting. And so we knew there had to be a better way that would work for our operation to put those in. And so we did some research and made some adjustments on our planter that we use for corn and beans. And so we've got a diverse mix now of radish, vetch, and lentils because they are similar seed size for our vacuum planter. And so we place them with our planter in 20-inch rows. And we end up with, you know, a precision planting cover crop through the field that we can follow with corn or beans the next year. And that cover crop, you know, captures those nutrients in the soil and holds it. It's almost like strip till, but, you know, I call it that bio strip. You know, you've got this natural action from these plants that are digging deep down, breaking up compaction, while still providing those nutrients in that zone for the next year, so that when I come back and plant our corn or beans, I'm going to be within, try to be within 3-4 inches of that strip. And those roots for those, that next year's crop does not have to look very far to find those nutrients that it needs. And obviously with the radishes growing deep down in the soil, it's a easy root zone for the corn or the beans to follow and dig deep down in the soil for not only water, but more nutrients. And I think it's been working real well for us. And I'm kind of excited to see how it continues over the next 5-10 years, because we're only in year 3 of it. And you learn something every year, make a minor adjustment here or there. But what we've seen so far is we're able to withstand those weather extremes even better with that strip till in there.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, is there anything else you wanted me to talk to you guys about or ask you? Have you guys got any other thoughts? Jamie, you've got something. I know you've got something. I can see it.
Big picture.
No, we're just, I don't know. We're lifelong learners and we want to make this the best we can. And we're always open to new practices, you know, trying to find the best practice for each piece of land. I guess when you were talking about, you know, fields within a field, you know, the zones, you know, it's finding the best practices for each piece of land that you have. And so whether that's leaving it pasture, crop, or whatever you're doing with it, that's what we're after, is finding best practice. Just like in any industry has its best practices, you know, and that's what we're after. And in agriculture, it's different for everybody because every piece of ground is different. And so that's what we're after, is finding those best practices to move this farm into the next 100 years for the next generations. So,
mm-hmm. What about you, Brian? Do you have any other thoughts?
Well, I think the big thing that we've tried to live by here on our farm is that you never know the result unless you try something. You've got to be open to giving something a try, changing your approach on something a little bit and testing it. You know, whether that's going from tillage to no-till, or, you know, variable rate fertilizer and seeding and anything nowadays. You can't just sit and maintain and expect to last in this industry. And that goes for any occupation. I mean, you've got to always be willing to, you know, think outside the box a little bit, take advice from the wife, and try something new every once in a while. And the results might surprise you. And maybe it doesn't, maybe it's considered a failure, but you learn something. So it's really not a failure. You're still learning, and then you can adapt that to the next time you make a, do a little science experiment out in your field and make another strip of whatever it is, fertility or, you know, various crops. It's got to be open to the idea.
Yeah. So citizen science at work. Okay. So you know what practice you're going to use next year, because I'm going to get this on record over here. So we're going to try some check strips next year.
I think so. That's going to require me to make a phone call to the to the fertilizer applicator, because we got our prescription set up yesterday. So
I want to hold you to that.
But I think we can probably make something work there. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's definitely up here for future use.
Yeah. Well, Brian and Jamie, it's so good to talk to you guys. It sounds like you're learning from natural systems. You're learning from nature, and it's really exciting to talk to you. I really appreciate you taking your time during harvest to speak to us.
Well, when we have the opportunity to have you on our farm, it's not something you're going to shy away from. You're always going to learn something.
Well,
right?
You're making me blush.
Well, we sure appreciate you coming all the way out here.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Well, thanks very much, folks. Appreciate it.
Well, what did you think about that, Baron?
Pretty powerful stuff. It's really interesting to me that they were able to get all of that good information in honestly 30 minutes. That was a lot in there.
Yeah, they think through their stuff, I think. That was pretty good. I think what struck me was Jamie talking about them being lifelong learners.
Yes.
So, you know, from as a science point of view, science is never settled. You can't prove things with science. You can't settle things with science. You can merely test hypotheses and advance hypotheses. And I think they embody that as well.
Yeah, they really do.
Right? Yeah. So, Brian was talking about always, you know, trying something new and not being afraid. And Brian, if you're listening to this right now, I'm holding you to those check strips next year.
Yeah, I believe that he will hold you to those as well. One thing that I specifically enjoyed about the interview, too, was hearing about Jamie Johnson's active role in really a day-to-day basis in their operation. I know she's raising their kids, but the reading that she's doing, the book work that she's doing, and really every step along the way, it sounds like she is very involved.
Yeah, well, I think when you have two heads rather than just one, two different perspectives, I think your ability to solve problems is a lot better and to advance the system. And I think that's really what they're trying to do. They don't see their system as something that's static, but they're driving that system. And really, you know, a lot of that is making it better for their family and their children to take over.
Definitely. And yeah, that's, I would say, the resiliency that they've built up and the fact that they had a pretty good year in 2017 compared to a lot of South Dakota farmers, that's a reflection of the teamwork and of having two heads that are better than one.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we hope you guys enjoyed this third episode of the SD Cropcast. We'll be cranking out several more over the coming months. I am Barrett Self.
And I'm Buzz Klute.
And keep it crispy. We still don't really have a sign off.
No, we don't.
We look forward to spending some more time with you guys soon.